everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. We're back. I know we took this long hiatus. You know, I spent some time in a substance abuse program. No, that's not true at all, is it? I'm sorry. Oh, wow. Anyway, I'm Steve. He's
Larry.
Larry? Larry?
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek.
That's
EMT CSO.
You dang right you are. You own those titles, my friend.
I earned them.
Yeah, that's right. I earned the hard way.
Smith. The hard way. Smith. Nobody helped me. I
completely self-made man, except other than all the benefits I got out of life beforehand, allowed me to get there. Yeah. Hey, it's good to be back with y'all. Larry and I are going to talk about, get this, we're going to talk about Daniel 10, which is not in Revelation. So it's almost like we're going to other places talking about other things. And yet,
The thing we're thinking, Stephen, is Stephen, I like that. The thing that we want to do is, most people, when they do Revelation, they do it as eschatology, and they tie in many of the Old Testament passages that they think refer to eschatology. I'm not doing it specifically that way, but I wanted to pick up on Daniel because I know Revelation, the author of Revelation, uses Daniel, uses Ezekiel, uses Exodus quite a bit. And so I just wanted to look. Daniel is considered an apocalyptic book, and so is Ezekiel. So I wanted to pick up at least one chapter of Daniel. And in the chapter that we're going to do, Steve, it's actually the angelic aspect of it, because, as you know, Revelation has angels all the way through, far more mention of angels in Revelation than any other book of the Bible, I'd say. But his understanding of angels may have come from his knowledge of books like Daniel and Ezekiel and maybe Tobit and things like that as well. So
awesome. Well, folks, with no further ado, or with maybe with some ado, limited ado, we're going to go with limited ado. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of treat Daniel 10, kind of paragraph by paragraph. Larry will talk us through some of the things that he sees in there. So if you want to keep up, by all means, we'll be in Daniel 10. We're reading out of the ESV. And why don't I hit the first, maybe I'll just hit the first verse and then we can kind of talk from there, eh, Larry?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, folks, Daniel 10, verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar? Belteshazzar? Is that even close, Larry?
Belteshazzar.
Belteshazzar. Wow, I would be really lousy at like Jewish names of old, or of Persian names of old.
Persian names, yeah.
Yes, that's right. He's not even Jewish. Okay, and the word was true, and it was a great conflict. He understood the word and had an understanding of the vision.
So, Stephen, this chapter in the book of Daniel, of course, you know, you remember in early Daniel, there's the three Hebrew boys, there's the fiery furnace, there's Daniel in the lion's den. There's a lot of things going on. Well, now we're later on in Daniel's life. Daniel, we think, was an octogenarian, at least, that he lived into his 80s. Now, one thing that we need to make quite clear is that I'm going to treat this book, or at least this passage that we're doing, as though it was written by Daniel. It was written in 536, in that range, in that era. But many scholars don't believe that Daniel was written in the time of Daniel, that it was written actually much later in the Second Temple period, in what Christians call the intertestamental period. They think it was written in the time probably when the Seleucids took over. 132, Alexander split his kingdom just before he died. Okay. He split his kingdom to his four generals. The two generals important to New Testament studies were Ptolemy and Seleucid.
Okay.
But the Ptolemies were around Egypt. The Seleucids were up around Damascus. Jerusalem was in the middle.
Okay.
And Jerusalem had it fairly Israel had it fairly good for a while the Ptolemies were in charge. After that, a guy named Antiochus came in. He was a Seleucid, and he believed in the whole power of Greek culture and knowledge and wanted everybody to be Greek, and when he came in, there was a great pressure was put on Israel in the first century BC.
Okay.
And so many scholars think that Daniel was written at that time.
Okay.
It's an apocalyptic idea that that they would be a little bit clear about the past, crystal clear about the time of the writing, and then big about the future. And that's the way they would look at Daniel. That's the way they'd see Daniel.
Okay.
I'm still going to treat it as if this is Daniel talking, written by Daniel in 500.
Okay. Awesome. Okay.
So this was written, therefore, he says, so Daniel says, the author of this book says that Cyrus was the king of Persia. Persia was the ruler. Israel, remember, Israel went into captivity in 735 under Assyria. Babylon took over from Assyria in the mid-500s, in the late 500s, which is, you know, around 540, 530. Persia actually takes over Babylon. That was Daniel's writing on the wall. Many, many tekel upharsin. You're found in the balance. You've been weighed in the balance and found wanting. And then Persia took over, and now Daniel is still, he's older. He's not the political person he was, but he still seems to have some say in what goes on. And this is where he has this vision that he has.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting. All right, folks, so picking it up now at verse 2, and I'll read all the way to the end, all the way to the end of verse 9. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks. I ate no delicacies, no meat or wine entered my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all for the full 3 weeks. On the 24th day of the first month, I was standing on the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris. I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen, and a belt of fine gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes like flaming torches. His arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze. And the sound of his words like the sound of a multitude, or the sound of a multitude. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me did not see the vision. But a great trembling fell upon them, and they fled to hide themselves. So I was left alone and saw this great vision, and no strength was left in me. My radiant appearance was fearfully changed, and I retained no strength. Then I heard the sound of his words, and as I heard the sound of his words, I fell on my face in a deep sleep with my face to the ground.
You know, one thing I'm going to have to do one day is read these passages in the English Standard Version before you read. It reads so different in this version.
Well, no worries. Let's correct where the ESV got it wonky.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm not saying that. I just said, you know, the gold from Uphaz was kind of interesting. So Daniel says, you know, I was mourning for 3 weeks. I ate no delicacies. I had no meat, no wine entered my mouth during this period of time. There's something here that I want to mention. It's probably not critical at all, but when at one time when I was pastoring, there were people that went around saying that we should eat beans, that all Christians should eat beans. Lentils, they call them.
Beans?
Lentils. Yeah, they said lentils are the perfect diet. If you'll recall, Daniel and the Hebrew boys and his other friends.
Yes, right? Yes.
They did not let any of the choice food of Babylon at that time touch their lips, and they only ate. They said, "We will eat nothing but lentils for that period of time." And at the end of the period of time, remember the guy finally allows them to all eat that. And at the end of the period of time, they're leaner and they're stronger and they're smarter than. Yeah. All of the kids that they brought from all of the other places into Babylon, and so they said, so therefore God's diet for us is to eat nothing but beans, and that's what we do. I want to be careful about laughing at this because you know these people like they you know oh like they're never going to hear me, But anyway, I just wanted to point out that Daniel did not do that for his entire life, right? he did that for that period of time when he was committing himself to God.
Right.
When that period of time was over, he ate meat and he drank wine and had the choice foods of the heart, right?
Yeah.
So just like there's value in some of these diets, but just be a little careful about how spiritual.
yeah. Try not to ascribe some spiritual value to lentil eating.
That's right. It has another effect as well. which, you know, you may enjoy or not. But so Daniel decided. So he doesn't say why he was mourning. He doesn't say that here. But he spends this time and he goes to the bank of the River Tigris. He is still a powerful politician. There's still something in him because he said he had men with him. Mm-hmm. Like he wasn't just some lone guy wandering around having visions from God. He was still a political person.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to mention that about Daniel. We often think of God's people and God's prophets as being paid prophets set aside for the work of prophecy. Mm-hmm. But Daniel was never that. Daniel's job was to be in the government, was to be a political person. His life was a life of politics.
Right.
But in his private life, he was a very spiritual person, and God used him in prophecy in that way. So if you're thinking I need to get out of my job and become a minister, that may be true, or I don't want to say any more of this because it's starting to make me think about myself. That may be true, or maybe God has you right where he wants you, and you just need to obey him there. Oh, look at that spiritual stuff I'm throwing into this.
Oh, only in certain circumstances.
That's right. I will try to back away from that quickly. And
yes,
then we'll,
that's right.
So while he's sitting by the great river, he sees this man clothed in linen. He's wearing a golden belt. Sounds like Mr. T to me for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know.
His body is like barrel. His face is he's the guy's gorgeous, right?
Yeah.
You know, appearance of lightning. Now you can take that to the extent of lightning, or you can just say, you know, he looks like Fabio or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, one of those guys who actually got hit in the face by a pigeon, I heard, and he was still okay. And this guy, so his eyes are like flaming torches, his legs are like burnished bronze. So he is seeing the full out image of one of God's other creations, mm-hmm. right? He's seeing the full out image of an angel.
Okay.
And he says, I saw the vision alone because the men with me, all great bodyguards, right?
Yeah.
They all fled in terror.
We're out of here.
Yeah. We're here for you, Daniel. Not now. And here is the thing about this. If these guys are bodyguards, I mean, trained bodyguards, they don't leave. When the going gets tough, they don't leave. You know, they take a bullet for the person. But when the supernatural happens, that is a level beyond what I think people can handle.
Yeah, exactly.
So they all run away. Daniel's left by himself. He sees the great vision. And then he says, my strength left me. Mm. So he actually drops down onto the ground. And my features changed. I was terrified. When I heard the words, I fell into a deep sleep on the ground. So he actually went unconscious on the ground when the angel starts talking to him. So incredible vision of an angel. And you remember in Revelation, whenever they saw angels, they had this great desire to worship them.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the angels in the book of Revelation, in every other book of the Bible too, whenever people feel that, they always say, don't do it. Don't do it, I'm a servant like you are. Do not worship me.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. And we'll get to that in the next paragraph here.
Yeah.
Okay, so folks, picking it up, verse 10, and I'll read all the way to the end of verse 14. And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for now I have been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. And then he said to me, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, Your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me for 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I was left there with the king of Persia, and came to make you understand what it is to happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision is for the days yet to come.
So this angel comes to Daniel, and he touches him and sets him on his hands and knees. So does he actually lift him up? I don't know. He just comes to him, and Daniel ends up on his knees, hands and knees. And he says to him, he says, you know, you're fabulous, Dan. Like you are greatly loved. Mm-hmm. That would be nice to hear.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you go from incredible fear to God saying through his angel saying to you, don't be afraid, Daniel. Now listen to this part here. Then he said to me, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself, your words have been heard, and I have come. So remember, Daniel started fasting. Remember, he had that period of fasting where he didn't eat choice foods, and he didn't fully bathe and use all the lotions. You know, I hope he bathed a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there might have been another reason his men left him.
Yeah, that's right. Ooh.
But he was concentrating on God, and now this angel comes to him, stands him up, and says, "You're greatly loved." And then he says, as soon as you started fasting and praying, I came to you. Okay? Hmm. Now, where am I here? Fear not. I heard. I have come. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me for 21 days. This is the weirdest thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, because I sat there going, what?
What?
And yeah. Then it required Michael to help him.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And this is one of the reasons that people don't believe this stuff at all. But as you recall, my church background accepts the whole idea of angels and angels actually being on the earth today. Whether anybody
right.
actually believes it, we theoretically believe it. Mm-hmm. We believe that angels can come. And so what he's saying to you is, Daniel, you started praying and God sent me to you. And I got into some kind of angelic battle with an angel with a different angel, with a bad angel. Can we say
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
With the prince of Persia, which would be the angel over Persia, which would be actually a dark force. Mm. In the 1980s, a guy named Frank Peretti wrote a series of books called
right. This Present Darkness, right?
Yeah, This Present Darkness, Piercing the Darkness. And it was all about angels. And these angels are fighting each other, and they're going through buildings and all that stuff. And totally a work of fiction. But sounds very much like this thing of Daniel, right? Mm-hmm. I came to tell you what God wanted me to tell you, Daniel. But I was held up. And so, therefore, you had to continue your fasting and praying for 21 days. Kind of an intriguing thing, isn't it? That,
yeah.
That Daniel kept on praying, and after 21 days, he got there. And I don't know of any particular value in the number 21. Number 3, 3.5, that's a limited sure. period of time in the book of Revelation. 3 weeks could be pointing to that kind of stuff. 21, I'm not so sure of. Except what we know for sure is that Daniel prayed for a long time before he got his answer from
yeah.
God.
Yeah. It's even weird to say, "And for I was left there with the kings of Persia."
Yeah. Yeah. And he's in a full-out fight. This would make actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
He's in a full-out fight with this other angel, fighting however angels fight. And Michael has to come from heaven, come down and help him in this battle, right? And once Michael takes – you think Michael could beat the guy pretty fast. You know, he was one of the archangels.
Right.
But, and that's not from what's the name of that show? Airwolf.
Yes.
Michael the Archangel is an Airwolf as well, but totally different guys, I believe. And Michael starts fighting this other person. And this book talks about it as if it's reality, not, well, we would use the word apocryphal, but that, you know, not as a fantasy at all.
Yeah.
not talking about this as a fantasy. He's talking about reality.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a figurative figure of speech, or it's not to represent something else. This is literally describing a battle that happened.
Yeah, yeah. And talking again about something that someone told me one time about, he was sitting in church and he got this vision of the whole angelic thing that was going on at the same time that the preacher was preaching. And he wasn't inclined toward that stuff. So it kind of interested me that he said that. But just the idea that the spiritual reality is every bit as real as the physical reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, as the book of Hebrews talks about, you know, the real thing is in heaven. Everything else is just a shadow of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's so ironic compared to how we live, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know why I do this stuff with you. It always makes me feel so bad about the way I live my life.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to stop with the conviction of this word right now. No.
Yeah.
No. Awesome. All right, folks, we'll pick it up again at verse 15, and I'll read down to the end of verse 17 now. And when he had spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face toward the ground and was mute. And behold, one in the likeness of the children of a man touched my lips. And I opened my mouth and spoke. And I said to him who stood before me, O Lord, by reason of the vision pains have come, O my Lord, by reason of the vision, pains have come upon me, and I retain no strength. How can my Lord's servant talk with my Lord? For now, no strength remains in me, and no breath is left within me.
Yeah. Not every church has a culture of prophecy. I know that that our group does. We have a culture that accepts prophecy and things like that.
Right.
And many times, the ones that do what we consider prophetic ministry, they are very happy with themselves. You know, they're very, very pleased with what they're able to do. It intrigues me, and it may not be every time, but at least at this point, Daniel's embarking on a prophetic ministry, and it's painful for him.
Right.
He doesn't even feel he has the strength to do this thing that God wants him to do.
And no arrogance in it whatsoever, right? It's just humility. It's not, this is how God's blessed me. This is, how can I do this? It's a very Moses-type response to us.
And I don't know if you've ever been asked to do anything that you felt like God wanted you to do, but often it seems that it's they're really difficult things to do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go against the way we would normally live, the way who we are, what we want to be.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Called to those ministries in Hawaii, you know, that's easy.
The surfing ministry that I was called to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But all the other things in life that God asks us to do. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Right.
Well, even the, will you speak to this person? Oh man, no. No, actually, no, I won't. I can't.
Yeah.
Will you speak it? Will you stand up and say something in this group for me? No, I won't. I won't do it. I can't do it. And then when you do it, you're so terrified of the repercussions of it.
Right.
And I think, I don't know that prophecy is always that way, but there are times that it must be that way.
Yeah.
Now, these guys, for some reason, they were real prophets. Like, they really knew that this was God speaking to them. There was no doubt in their mind that God wanted them to do that, at least the way they say it in the book.
Right, yep.
So Daniel receives this vision from God. He's interested in the future, and in the next couple chapters, he's going to do that. And now he's got to go into this next piece that you're going to read.
Okay, cool. Okay, folks, so here we're just hitting our stride, and we're at the end. But hey, so we're reading from 18 to the end of 21 now. And again, one having the appearance of a man touched me and strengthened me. And he said, O man greatly loved, fear not, peace be with you. Be strong and of good courage. And as he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. And then he said, do you know why I've come to you? But now I will return to the fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go out, behold, the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There are none who contends by my side against these, except Michael, your prince. What?
Yeah. but the other thing with Daniel's vision, you know, of course it's talking about, right now it's talking about Persia, and then these are the powers, remember? The powers were Egypt at one time, and then Babylon. Usually when they talk about the head, they start with Babylon, the golden head. And so there's Egypt was a power, Assyria was a power, then Babylon was a power, then Persia was a massive power for a very, very long time. Persia was a power. And then after Persia, Greece, remember the Persian Wars? Mm-hmm. The Greek Wars, Spartan, the battles of Thermopylae, you know, the Athenian Navy, all of this stuff comes in. And eventually Persia is broken down, and Greece, under a Macedonian named Philip, and then his son Alexander the Great, Macedon unites Greece, and they become a major power for a very long time. Now, they're an odd major power in that they're actually city-states. They're broken. We might find some time that there, if we count them up, that there's 10 of them. People tie that right into Revelation. Right?
Oh, yes, they do.
There's the glory of it. And then after them, of course, after Greece, then you've got the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. And, of course, on the other side of the empire, you've got the rise of Rome through all of this.
Right.
And then Rome becomes the power after that. And, of course, in Revelation, it's all about Rome. So Daniel is, when he's talking about these princes, he's talking about world powers. It's kind of an intriguing thing to think of world powers as being controlled by angelic forces. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It changes a lot of where we're at and what we think.
Right.
And I'm not a politician. I'm not a political person, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Even though I have conspiracy theory people around me that talk to me all the time about it.
Yep.
And but I do see something going on here. Daniel was talking about the future of nations. But all of this came from God, from God's angels talking to Daniel.
Yeah.
And in apocalyptic, God always speaks to you, always. The general trend of apocalyptic is that you're being spoken to from God through angelic beings.
Right.
And that's what happens here. And again, the reason we did this is because John picks up on all of this type of thing when he's talking in Revelation.
Right, right. And don't you, and you'd probably tell me this already, so forgive me for repeating it, is that, you know, just as Daniel is speaking about Persia and Greece, John is speaking about Rome in Revelation much through the moniker of Babylon, I guess, or however you want to say it, through the metaphor of Babylon.
Yes, they Rome, in John's mind, if I can say that, that might be a little too pushing my ideas too hard, but Rome is Babylon.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And they're actually cities built on hills and all that. There are some similarities as well.
Yeah.
And John is thinking about Rome, and then we pick it up. And of course, we extend it beyond Rome into the spiritual interpretation, the idealistic interpretation that this is all nations that are rising up.
Yeah,
that's right. And at one point, up until this century, United States was that.
Yeah.
But that's changed right now. I wouldn't say people would go there now the way they did 10, 15 years ago.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
But so,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say you go.
So just know that that if angels are a literary ploy, then they are. But many Christians actually believe these beings exist and this stuff is actually happening. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you go.
Well, and I was going to say it was a great passage to reinforce what we saw in Revelation, mm-hmm. that God has angels for a purpose, you know, even though we're like, hey, Joe, go over there and throw Satan in the pit, would you? okay. but that there actually is, you know, a whole, like you said, a whole spiritual realm where things are going on that we don't understand or see, but that is the real world, and we live in the shadow. And I think that's the greatest thing to take right out of it, right there and there.
Yeah. And if we believed it, we'd be the freest of all people.
Yeah. Yes. So. Stop with the conviction. Stop it.
Stop that stuff.
Stop that convicting stuff. Well, awesome, folks. Lara, thanks so much for doing that. That's an awesome vision into influences on John's work through Daniel, and like you said, you know, Ezekiel and all those types of things that we'll get to too. Folks, as always, we're so glad that you came with us on this journey. It's just, here we go again. Now we're starting something new. Isn't that fun? And we'll be back with more episodes in the near future. But for now, we'll sign off because I'm Steve and he's
Larry.
And we'll see you again next time on the Apocalypse Podcast.